Good morning, honorable members, minister, deputy minister. We're ready to start. Everybody, you are welcome, and thank you very much for attending. We hope you to finish just before 1 o'clock this afternoon. And welcome to you, ladies and gentlemen, who always come to attend the meeting of the Portfolio Committee. We appreciate your presence. The secretary will read the apologies, and immediately after that, we will have a briefing by the department . Obviously, we will have opening remarks by the minister, and then we'll listen to the presentation. Yeah, in fact, two presentations. The director told me that the fuel price will come down tomorrow. So, we'll hear about that later on in a minute. apologies, please.
Thank you, just one apology from Honorable Pagabella Machere, who is of Sydney, so on Sydney. Thank you, sir.
So there's only one apology, and I take the apology is accepted. We will give over to the management by the minister to have a opening remark before we get the two presentations. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, members of the committee, members of the department, the media. Thank you very much for this opportunity. Chairperson, I'm not going to go into the presentation. We'll respond to questions as it comes. I thought it would be appropriate to first inform the committee that the position of the Director General for Energy has been advertised. The closing date is the 12th of September. If the committee members missed that, I just want you to know that. And then the nominations of suitable candidates to serve on the boards of our state-owned entities that report to the Minister of Energy. The closing date was the 29th of August, but all the SOEs that have been mentioned in the advert, if there are indications that members would like to nominate suitable candidates and they miss the deadline, I'll I'll allow you to nominate your candidate, but of course, please give it to me by tomorrow. Chairperson, I'm happy that you have indicated the price of fuel will be lowered considerably, and I'll appreciate it if you give compliments for that. If not, it will go up again next month. So we have good news, but tomorrow you expect us to keep the light on. So when we bring down the price of fuel, we're not so sure if we can bring down the price of electricity. The presentation will speak for itself. The only matter that I thought of a policy matter that I'd like to include is that we published a position paper on South African biofuel regulatory framework. And I'd appreciate comments from the members on the biofuel position paper. We'll be having an inter-ministerial committee meeting with the Minister of Environmental Affairs, Minister of Water, Agriculture, Land Reform, CGI, and EDP. Of course, the one minister that has said already categorically said that if you're requesting money, no, Minister of Treasury. So we'd like to get to some blending regime on the biofuel, which I'm sure the officials will be able to elaborate on when the questions do arise. But our priority, one of our priority areas in this term of office, it should be to bring the biofuel proposal to this committee. And before the regulations would be passed, we'd also carry to the committee with those regulations. So bring the draft regulations for the blending regime. We are participating in the land summit this weekend, specifically as it pertains to biofuel and shale gas. So as soon as we have some form of direction in this regard, we'll be happy to brief the committee. Any questions as they arise from the presentation will be taken. I'll check if the deputy minister wanted to add anything before we start. Thank you,
Chairperson. Thanks very much for the opening remarks, Minister. So there will be no question about the voting position. So we were told the very last committee meeting, the first question was on the voting position. So that is clarified.
Chairperson, that is why I responded because of one of your questions. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks very much. I think we can, I don't know who's going to start. Minister, we can give over to the panel to start with the presentation. Thanks.
Honorable Chair, members, Minister, Deputy Minister, colleagues, thank you very much. The presentation today will be pretty much just focusing on the petroleum industry. Because that's a brief window, as well as the pricing regime around that. So the raw background around the industry itself, given by Mr. Cabella, that's a bit of like the general product branch, and then Mr. Robert Markey will deal with the pricing, fuel pricing issue, including public gas. We're not in this presentation dealing with biofuels because that is another environment, but this is just sort of what it in the dirty fossil fuels that we're dealing with for today, I will say. Thanks. Mr. Makabala, with you.
Thank you, Chair.
Good
thank you, Chairperson. I also want to thank the Minister, Deputy Minister, and the Acting DG, honorable members, members of the public. Good morning. I'm here with a team from the Petroleum and Petroleum Regulation Branch, and Mr. Michael is sitting next to me. We will do the presentation on the pricing. And he is the one that decided that since we're coming here, then we have to recommend to the minister that the price comes down. But Chairperson, on a more serious note, we also have three other colleagues with us. Ms. Riketi is responsible for licensing, but also for empowerment driving the liquid fuel charter. Mr. Machete is the Mr. Machete is the acting chief director for petroleum licensing and enforcement. Chairperson is acting because the chief director has been off sick for quite a while, but he's on the mend, so that position is filled. And then Mr. Pashamshaka is the director responsible for licensing. So sorry for fuel supply.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Going on to the presentation, there are other members of Team Energy, but I thought the ones who are responsible for regulation are needed to just introduce. I'll be very brief on the context, the provisions in terms of the Act. Just to also talk about the stakeholders, I think it's important for the committee to note the sources of crude oil and what they mean for South Africa. The infrastructure we have, briefly on issues of security of supply, challenges nationally, regionally, and then the expectations that we believe are there from the stakeholders. I think we can not overemphasize the fact that we rely quite a lot on liquid fuels in the country. And in fact, even for keeping the lights on, we rely on liquid fuels because the diesel generators, the OCGTs that are operated by Eskom in this part of the country are run using diesel. So we play as a sector a very important role. The other issue is that I would like to bring to the attention of the committee is the fact that increasingly we are relying a lot on imports of finished product, diesel as well as petrol. And those numbers have been climbing over the last few years. We also depend entirely 100% on imported oil. In as far as crude oil is concerned. So for us, any development around exploration and development on our coast is very important, because then that means that we will begin to deal with that reliance on import going forward. So we look with quite excitement and anticipation to the work that is being done in the Southern Cape around drilling. The price of crude oil and finished products, I think that members would have noted that it is stabilizing around $105 per barrel, and that is from the highs I think we saw around 120. Mainly those were due to geopolitical tensions around the globe. Of course, this price changes very quickly if there is a geopolitical tension. But ideally, we believe that to produce oil at this stage, the price of around $100 per barrel would sustain the companies that are doing the exploration and production. And most of that at the moment happens outside our country, but there is a lot of that happening also in the continent. We don't have a lot of proven resource in the country. There is excitement around shale gas, and we look forward to accelerating that, and then the potential in around our coast, particularly now in the Southern Cape, I think is quite exciting. Members have read in the media that one of the companies, Total, actually has got a rig that is stationed in the Southern Cape, and where they are going to start doing work towards exploration for hydrocarbons in the country. That is a significant development in our view. We as a country, it is well known that in terms of food externally, we don't necessarily have quite a lot of footprints, and that is something that has got to change. And that costs money. And that money, however, I think buys the country energy security. It's an insurance that we need to pay for, and the mechanisms of doing that are the ones that we will be discussing internally. And when the time is right, we will, with the permission of the minister, bring them to the committee. The sector as a whole employs around 110,000, and most of those jobs are in the retail space. And I've highlighted this because there are always calls for deregulation of the price as well as self-service. But the downside of doing that is that you would lose, basically, if you were to say we introduce self-service, you would lose close to 20,000 jobs. Now, that is a situation that, in our view, would not be acceptable. So we want to highlight this, that the sector sustains quite a number of jobs. The turnover in the sector is around the figure that has indicated that, in fact, the figure that the latest figure that is coming through now is actually that we are tending towards the 300 billion turnover in the sector. So it is a sector that is significant in the GDP and a significant contributor to GDP. And for that matter, it has the potential of making an impact on radical economic transformation. Briefly, I share on the emanating provisions. Why, how do the work that we do? We do the work we do in terms of the Petroleum Products Act, Act 120 of 1977, as amended. The extracts of the powers of the minister are there, basically to regulate in the manner that the minister deems fit, to ensure efficient use of the petroleum product, ensuring that the cost of distribution is as low as possible, the supply, including import and export, is given to the minister as the mandate in terms of the Act, the pricing of petroleum products in the country. There has to be a display, as I've indicated there, for retail. The prices have got to be displayed, and there is a regulation governing that. The minister also appoints the controller of petroleum products, and also inspectors that go around the country inspecting the compliance, ensuring that those who are licensed comply with the requirements of the law. We have recently increased the number of inspections that we are conducting in the country. In the first quarter of 2014-15 financial year, we've actually increased the inspections to over 400 inspections in a quarter. Our target for the year is that we will basically do over 2,000 inspections. The minister is also the appeal authority on the decisions that are taken by the controller of petroleum products. on the stakeholders, many of whom I believe are in the room today. We have members of the South African Petroleum Industry Association. The recently, the membership of SAPIA has been extended beyond the oil companies. You have then, on their own, the oil companies play a key role. The first day, Sasol, BP, Shell, Chevron. The retailers also play a very important role. We have labor organizations that we have to engage on matters relating to employees that operate in the sector. The LPG Association is responsible for safety of the use of LPG in households. We have then the holders of licenses as we issue them, very important stakeholders, members of the public, in particular motorists, key stakeholders for us. In this regard, we have what we refer to as the public engagement meetings, basically in each province. Recently, there was an engagement with the public on the fuel pricing. We're going on a roadshow throughout the country to explain how the fuel pricing works. Transnet, nothing can move in as far as petroleum products without Transnet. They are very important stakeholder. Because fuel, for example, towards inland moves via the major pipeline, both the Durban to Johannesburg pipeline and what is referred to as the multi-product pipeline, NMPP. Rail also is important in ports. ACCA, in as far as jet fuel, important stakeholder for us. ESCOM, because the refineries require electricity for them to operate. We have a strategic fuel fund that looks after emergency crude oil stocks in Saldanha. And then the security agencies we consider very important to secure the infrastructure that is used in the sector. NERSA, of course, is also regulates pipelines and as well as storage facilities. They are licensed by NERSA, and they are very important stakeholders. Chairperson, on the issue of crude oil, I thought it's important for the committee to note that this is where we get our crude oil from. Basically, nearly half of our crude oil imports come from Saudi Arabia. 23% comes from Nigeria, 18% from Angola, 4% Ghana, then others, there are quite a number of others that account for 10%. Now, it's important that I talk to this slide because when there are tensions in the countries from where we import, we then, you know, would have to sit up and take note. So if there are tensions, I guess if there were to be tensions just in Saudi Arabia, the whole world would sit up and take note. So that one, perhaps, it is not so much of an issue because it would affect the whole world. Then Nigeria, whenever there are tensions in Nigeria, we get jittery because they account for a quarter, basically, of our import of crude oil. So stability in the countries, in the continent, particularly those three, is very important for energy security in our country. Now, we thought that it's important to explain that we also used to import crude from Iran, and that basically ceased when the U.S. and the EU imposed sanctions on Iran. However, what has since happened because of this is that the crude imports from the continent have increased, and I think that perhaps is a positive development that has come out of this negative circumstance that obtained. And I think it's important, Chair, that we also say that what keeps the fuel flowing in this country. So it's important to go through the infrastructure for liquid fuels in the country. Very important that we have an undersea pipeline which is anchored by what is referred to as a single buoy mooring, and that is where it's encased in, and that is the basically mechanism through which crude oil comes into the country. The big vessels basically they offload through this single buoy mooring, and it accounts for 80% of the crude oil imports into the country. That is one piece of infrastructure. Then the refineries, we have quite a number. There are two in Devon. The Safras refinery, which is the biggest, operated by Shell, owned by Shell and BP. And then you have the Engen refinery, which is in terms of crude is the second biggest, also in Devon, with a refinery owned by Chevron here in Cape Town. And then in Sasolburg, the refinery there is owned by Sasol and Total. And then in Secunda you have a coal to liquid facility, which basically has a nameplate of 150,000 barrels per day. And then PetroSA owns the most of the gas to liquid facility. Now that one has got a nameplate of 45,000 barrels a day. I spoke to the NMTP and the DJP. They are the pipelines that take fuel from the coast, the Durban coast to inland. And then there is also a crude oil pipeline that also moves crude oil from the coast of KZN to Sasolburg. That caters for the refinery, the largest refinery owned by Sasol and Total. Ports are very important in terms of infrastructure, the rail network, the depots, the roads, infrastructure. Although we're talking liquid fuel, the gas pipeline from Mozambique is a very important piece of infrastructure for the hydrocarbon sector in the country, because to a large extent it sustains a lot of the petrochemical businesses in the country. Then crude oil storage in South Ghana. We have storage owned by the state in South Ghana as well as in Milnerton. And basically that is the one that is operated by the Strategic Fuel Fund. And all of these pieces of infrastructure, check. I think it's important that at one point that the committee visits all the facilities, because they keep the wheels of the economy basically turning. And this is the infrastructure that on a weekly basis we basically have meetings with industry to monitor that everything is still going according to plan. Then if I move on to security of supply, we have a mechanism in the department where we monitor fuel supply, as I indicated, on a regular basis. We have a unit that looks after the monitoring of refinery shutdown, the import-export permitting, is done in the department as well. On a bi-monthly basis, we have supply manager meetings, and then weekly we have a team that on every Wednesday we meet with the industry, sometimes through teleconferences, and we discuss logistics as to where the pressure points are in the country, who can respond to those pressure points, and then supply is then directed towards those areas. And that is why shortages of fuel are a thing that we are soon, in my view, we don't see that, and we are quickly forgetting about the situations where there's sustained fuel shortages. However, having said all of that, if one refinery goes down unplanned, particularly the one here in Cape Town, that tends to have an impact on other petroleum products, not necessarily petrol and diesel, but you tend to find that very quickly at the LPG situation, the petroleum gas situation, there are shortages that become sporadic because of that. Now, in order to deal with that, it's going to be important that going forward, we increase the storage capacity for LPG, particularly in certain areas of the country, but also start looking at import infrastructure for LPG going forward. We also have a compliance fuel specification compliance program, and that program, we are very proud of the program. We get to, our plan basically is to get to every service station to make sure that what you put into your car basically is what is legislated. And that program is rolling, and at some point we can elaborate on the program itself. Then on challenges nationally, as I move towards the end of this part of the presentation, what are the challenges? Now, there's a challenge I've already alluded to. We need to continuously improve distribution infrastructure. That's got to happen. And how that can be done is a matter that will require, in some instances, some policy intervention. Then the issue of liquid fuel emergency and the capacity to respond. I think that we always need to be ready for an emergency. And not necessarily a local emergency, a global one. If, for example, there can be a situation, a geopolitical situation that disrupts the flow of crude oil, the flow of petroleum products into our part of the world, we need to have the capacity to respond to that, and that is an area that we are going to be focusing on, because I think when the flows happen as they are happening currently, you can be lulled into complacency, and then when you are hit with an emergency, you find that you are unable to respond. That's an area that we are going to focus quite a lot on. As I indicated earlier, the fact that we don't have crude of our own, crude oil, is an area that requires a national solution. Then economic transformation, very important. Perhaps if I were to put it mildly as I have here, I think it's less than adequate currently. There is a need for some response as far as this is concerned. And I think the tools are there. What is required really is a concerted effort to enforce the compliance with the provisions of commitments that stakeholders have made. So I think that is an area that we are going to focus quite a lot on. Then going on to the other challenges, we supply as a country, Botswana, currently, Lesotho, Namibia, to some extent, and then Swaziland. Now, in a customs union, the deficit in as far as the capacity is concerned for petroleum products will reach 200,000 barrels per day. That is the shortage by 2020. That was the estimate that was given by a company called PFC Energy, a consultant company. Now, we think that this figure, we will reach this deficit basically before 2020. What that means is that we'll get to a stage where we import an equivalent of one major refinery that will be imported into this country on a daily basis. Now, in order to do that, we need to have the port infrastructure that can support. You need to have a licensing regime that can make sure that the vessels that bring that fuel into the country can offload and be allowed into the port in and out without any disruption. So that is going to require quite a change in the logistical arrangement for petroleum products imports into the country. The other reality that we are facing is that not all refineries are operating at nameplate capacity. So you can have a refinery that is has got a nameplate of 180,000 barrels, and then you find that that refinery is actually producing 90,000 instead of the 130,000. That is the reality that we have to confront. Hence the increase in imports that we are seeing, and this figure should there be with the clean fuels upgrade, if the chances are that some of the refineries actually will even lose some capacity in as far as the processing of crude oil is concerned. Another phenomenon that is we're experiencing is that the country is becoming attractive to traders. Now that has got benefits as well as downsides. The benefits are that then you have the ability to diversify in as far as where you source products is concerned when you have the trader. But then I think with traders, you rarely see an investment in refining capacity. So you will have import infrastructure with traders when they come in, but them investing in a refinery is something that we are not used to seeing them do in other jurisdictions. As I've also indicated earlier, that refinery unreliability is impacting on LPG at times, as well as very importantly on bitumen. This then has a capacity to have a negative impact on road infrastructure construction. Then on jet fuel, already we are importing 120 million liters a year. Of course, the use of jet fuel basically is over 2.8 billion. So it's still a small figure, but with jet fuel, you don't want to keep on increasing your import of jet fuel, because when that jet fuel is off specification, then it becomes a challenge. So there's got to be a point at which we say, you know, this much of imports and no more. Regionally, I think the fact that South Africa, there's a massive shortage of infrastructure in the region. Sub-Sahara is what I'm talking about. There is a shortage of infrastructure. The pipelines, there is a shortage of pipelines, and I'm talking about the region now, not necessarily our own country, because trucking is not an efficient mode of moving fuel. And you see a lot of trucks in other countries being used to move fuel. Now, that becomes a burden on the road infrastructure as well. The shortage of refineries in the region, and there is talk of building refineries, but there is a need to encourage the region to do more. Then the import facilities need to be upgraded. There have been some positive developments in Mozambique. I think this is helping the supply security in the region, and in fact a number of other countries are beginning to rely on or to plan around a reliance on Mozambique going forward. I think this will only help regional integration going forward. Then the demand for fuel, petrol and diesel, far outstrips supply. The shortage basically is 700,000 barrels per day in Sub-Sahara. That is the shortage. So basically, you can combine all the refineries we have in the country, and that basically is the shortage of supply that Sub-Saharan Africa faces on petrol and diesel. So that is all important, even though Africa itself is a continent. Some of the countries are producing crude oil. Exporters of crude oil, however, they are massive importers of petrol and diesel. So there is a need for a regional strategy around beneficiation of petroleum in the region. And within SADC, the deficit was 250,000 in 2012. Very important for the committee to note is that in the whole of SADC, the refineries are in this country, and then Luanda, Angola has one, and then Zambia has one that is quite small. But they are planned in Uganda to construct a refinery, and those plans are quite advanced. Kenya had a refinery. It was converted into an import terminal. The utilization of refineries in our country and the region is amongst the lowest in the world. The last three slides talk to expectations. I think the big one, I think, from our stakeholders is the slow pace of empowerment. I think that is an issue that requires attention, and I think we have to respond to that. Secondly, for us now, the turnaround times for licenses is something that this is now for talking to the work that we do within the department. It's important that we always make sure that we are able to keep to the turnaround time. Then the issue of the wages for federal attendants, Mr. Mate will talk to that, but the minister granted last week an increase in the petrol price, which then will also result in the increase in the wages of the petrol attendants. And that is something that we believe requires a lot of focus. They are a key stakeholder for us as a department, and we would like to ensure that they are able to be compensated in as far as all the agreements that have been reached with labor organizations. Then the issue, there is always a, we thought it's important for us to put it here, that there is an expectation that the state should not get involved in the petroleum sector. So that is a discussion that is always out there, that the state's involvement will crowd out private sector and so on. But I think then there's got to be a balance in our view as to, you know, what level of state participation and so on. In this sector, there has got to be, in our view, state participation. The issue of clean fuels requires attention, and we can talk to that. Then there is the balance between retailers and oil companies, because the oil companies or the retailers are saying that the power relations are not balanced. There is a need for ministerial intervention. Now, we've looked at this globally, and we found that actually these kinds of issues are there, not only in South Africa, but you find them in countries where there's even been deregulation. So, this just talks to the issue of contracting between a wholesaler and a retailer. There's a contract that they basically enter into, but also an issue that will require some discussion is the issue around the vertical integration. To what extent do we, you know, move to enforce the prohibition? Is that the route that we want to go, enforce the prohibition of vertical integration? How do we do it in a manner that ensures that we still have a sustainable industry going forward? But also linked to that, how do we do it in such a way that there is a change in as far as economic participation is concerned? If we're to move this route, then we would have to insist that it's an opportunity for radical transformation, and therefore would have to, you know, come up with mechanisms that ensure that at all throughout the value chain we have the right participation by historically disadvantaged South Africans. Currently, I will say that is not the case. The certainty minister spoke to on certainty on the biofuels pricing framework, and I think we are at the end of that process as was indicated. And again, biofuels is an opportunity for us to introduce new players, not the, or, you know, the usual players. It's an opportunity to introduce new players into the market, into the economy, into mainstream petroleum economic activity. Then in the short term, where these are the things that we do, the adjustment, Mr. Mate will talk to that, and what we're doing in as far as the revision of the pricing elements is concerned. I will say this, however, that Chair and Honourable Members, it is clear for us that the pricing framework that we have currently, it works. Because when there are changes internationally, we are able to pass on those benefits to the motorists in the very next month. So it responds to what happens in international. It may be, you know, criticized, but currently I believe that it is the best that we can have. We can tweak it here and there, but, you know, I think we should not tamper too much with the pricing framework that we have. Very importantly, we have to look at fuel efficiency. Minister has directed that we need to do something around fuel efficiency as a matter of urgency. The biofuel framework has been spoken to. Also, we are trying to encourage people to use LPG. Now, that requires also some tweaking on the pricing framework for LPG, because now we are importing, we are having to import LPG in winter, particularly when there are challenges with the refineries. On empowerment, we need to build partnerships with the other government departments. And I think a matter I spoke to about state involvement is a need to ensure that the GTL facility in Mozambique can go back to producing 45,000 barrels a day. Currently, because of constraints on gas, it is operating at a far less than the nameplate capacity. Then going forward, the issues that have got to be dealt with in the medium term is that the Strategic Fuel Fund, that was the allocation for crude oil. It is very important that we look at a second import facility going forward and for crude, because currently, as I said earlier, 80% comes via one facility. Then the distribution infrastructure, I think it's getting there, but we need to continuously improve. Then Ocean Gas, which we look forward to, because it's going to help in as far as perhaps more GTL facilities being constructed in the country. We need to work very closely with GMR on making sure that there are skills for that. Capacity building for gas and gas policy and regulation, and then as well as aligned positions on carbon tech. Then the last slide talks to the issues in the longer term. Now, there isn't such a word in the dictionary as dieselization. But we felt that it is important that we demonstrate to South Africans that there are benefits to using diesel. There are benefits to the pocket, there are benefits also to basically then the economy, because the diesel engines that are there currently are very efficient, and the car can still move within the speed limit, of course, but they can move very quickly. And so there is no reason why we should, as a country, be so, you know, married to petrol. So there is a need for particularly the fleets, the government fleets, as well as other companies that operate the fleet of cars. I think moving to diesel will actually have benefits to the economy. This is what happens in Europe. You hardly ever see a petrol vehicle. And I think the U.S., there is a move to have more of the diesel. They are also, in the U.S., they like petrol vehicles. But I think the reality now is such that people are beginning to look at diesel vehicles. And the refining capacity will need a decision. The NDP, you know, the directive in terms of the NDP is very clear. A decision has got to be taken by before 2017. And we believe that that we will be able to make a recommendation in that regard to the minister. Then on the replacement, I think I spoke to Eskom using diesel. That has got to be replaced with natural gas. So those plans have got to be enhanced. And then the strategic stocks to cater for emergency, we need to do something about that. Originally, we need an approach, a FACU or FADEC approach to liquid fuel issues going forward. Chair, I thought that is where I should leave it. Perhaps it may look broad, but we thought we should have an overview of some of the issues that we are confronted with and not necessarily go to day-to-day specifics. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was hoping that we could do the second presentation before the first question, if that is possible, through you, Chairperson.
Yeah, in fact, I thought that we had a both presentation. I was beginning to change my mind that the candidate presentation to just focus on cars after the second presentation. Potentially lose sight of the issues that has been raised in the first presentation. But I'm sure honourable members will take that into account. I'm sure there's no objection to getting the second presentation. We can have questions after that. I actually wanted to suggest that for those who haven't had COVID, you may run into difficulties such as that you pray for I'll give you 1 minute extra. Just 6 minutes. And while doing great, both Honorable Freeland and Honorable Lowe, I'm sure she'll be paying keen interest in the fact that we have quite many strategic assets located in this part of the country from different perspectives, so we shall something to reflect upon. So 6 minutes, can we have a coffee? Minister, now you, now that you indicated that we should applaud you for the petrol price decrease, we'll do the same when the price increases. Now that we know it's you who...
It's definitely not me, Chairperson.
Okay, can we have the second presentation?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think it has been noted that I've not paid this month. I found it like this. Thank you for the opportunity to present. Honorable Minister, dear NFH here, members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to come and present to you, colleagues from the department and colleagues from the industry and members of the media. Thank you very much for coming to listen to our presentation today. I must first start with the petrol price announcement, just for the record. Tonight, petrol will decrease by 67 cents a litre. Diesel will decrease by 25.38 cents a litre. Eliminating paraffin at retail level will decrease by 25 cents a litre. Diesel will decrease by 25.38 cents a litre. And LP gas will decrease by 1.08 per kilogram. The main reason, Chairperson, for this decrease is the drop, the huge drop in the price of crude oil in August when we compare it with July. And in fact, Strategic Fund has actually informed me that there was also a huge demand for storage at the Manhattan depot, because people are buying crude oil, they want to store it, hoping that in future the price will be high so they can sell it. Okay, in terms of my presentation, Chairperson, I've structured it in the way that I'll talk to the basic fuel price, which are import parity price in South Africa. I'll spend a bit of time on that. And then I also talk to the single maximum national retail price for eliminating paraffin. I'll talk to the LP gas, you know, maximum price, retail price. And we'll deal also with some of the frequently asked questions. I must apologize right away, Chairperson, that we do not include answers to these questions in the presentation. However, we'll take you through the questions. We'll answer those questions. Chairperson, in the basically what happens in as far as pricing is concerned in the whole world, there are basically three forms of pricing that are used. The first one is ad hoc, you know, pricing system, where the price are set regularly. Sometimes are not even set during a month. It can take 6-5 months without the price being set in those particular countries. There's no transparency in pricing. There's no formula that is used, basically. And this normally happens in countries where there's a lot of crude oil. Sometimes they use the crude oil sales, you know, the money from selling the crude oil to subsidize the prices. But we also know, Chairperson, that most of these countries that used to subsidize fuel heavily, including some African countries like Nigeria and so on, they're actually moving away from subsidies. You know, they're reducing their subsidies because at the end of the day, somebody has to pay for those subsidies. The second one says is the formula-based or automatic pricing adjustment that we are using in South Africa, where we have a formula-based, and we know when the price will be adjusted on a regular basis. And actually, that's one of the reasons why in South Africa, the economy is, you know, going ahead of the department now that the expected price to increase or drop at the end of the month, because the process is transparent. They can access the information on the website, also on the SEC website. So there's actually no rocket science there. In terms of the third one, Chairperson, it's a deregulated market where the market and the prices themselves, it's a liberalized pricing system. However, if you look at the Australian example, you know that even though it's deregulated, there's still a watchdog in the form of the Australian Competition Consumer Commission that ensures that there's no collusion on the prices. So on a regular basis, they look at the pricing formula, they look at the import parity price, and so on, and make sure that they still protect the consumers. On the next slide, Chairperson, I only just highlighting some of the, just to emphasize that in South Africa, regulating petrol at retail level, diesel is not regulated. We only publish the wholesale selling price of diesel. Eliminating paraffin, we are regulating at the single maximum national retail price, which means there's one price for a litre of diesel of petrol, I mean a litre of paraffin throughout the country. That's why we call it the single maximum national retail price. In as far as LP gas is concerned, we also regulate the maximum retail price for LP gas. This started in 2010, basically. Well, in South Africa, certainly like in most countries, because we don't have our own crude oil, we don't have petrol, even gas, we don't have enough of gas, and also finished product. They're importing a lot of finished product now, as they did just alluded to, that our demand outstrips the supply that we have. we are using what is known as the import parity pricing principle. This is really the price that the, you know, an import of products will buy the product in the international market and every deliver to South African port or South African harbor. That's the import parity pricing. In South Africa, yesterday, we are using a deemed pricing principle. We are saying deemed, some will say it's imaginary and so on. It's not the real price, for example. Why? Because when we introduced the BFP, at the time, South Africa had oversupply of products. But then a decision was taken to say, if only for refineries to be competitive, mainly because we rely on importing crude and so on, in order for refineries to be competitive, we need to use import parity prices. That means that we ignore the refineries. We price our products as if everything else is imported. Right? The reason for that, they will argue, was that if some of our refineries had to go down, maybe unplanned shutdown, we won't have problems in terms of supply because we can still import products without necessarily having to change the price of the pump price because we're already using the import parity prices. We are also using what is known as the zonal pricing or the ministerial district zone. South Africa is divided into over 50, about 52 pricing zones. Each zone has got its own price. And these zones are based on the distance from the supply point, you know, where the product or the draw off point, if you like, where the pipeline will deliver the product and the product is taken from there, either by road or rail, to where it's required. So they are known as ministerial district zones. In terms of transporting the petroleum product, we look at the least cost mode of transport. As the Libyans alluded to, you can transport product by pipeline, you can transport by rail, you can transport by road. The cheapest one is pipeline, followed by rail, and then road is the most expensive. Mainly because you also bring less volume, like 40,000 liters and so on per truck, whereas with the pipeline you can bring even 10 million liters, you know, of the product at a go. So cheaper to use a pipeline. In our pricing system, where there is a pipeline and suppliers choose to use other mode of transport, we only reward them transport, you know, cost as if they were using pipeline. So the additional cost is borne by the sale of that particular product. Because we always look at the least cost mode of transport for that particular area. There is a lot of cost recovery you know, mechanism in the pricing that we use, mainly because of the regulation. As we regulate the retail price, obviously anything else that you introduce as government that will require additional funding, the industry will come to the department and say, how can we cover our cost? Because it's additional to what we are recovering at the moment. So normally that is passed through to the motorists. The example that the DG spoke about, the DG about the wage adjustment. Adjusted the price at 4.2 cents a liter. We increased the retail margin on petrol, which is equivalent to 9% salary increase that was agreed between the employer and the employees. That cost is already also passed through to the motors, so that they'll be paying for the wage increase at the end of September. On the next slide. Chairperson, I won't spend too much time on this. This is just to highlight some of the policy instruments that they're using in terms of regulation, not only in pricing, but also in the department as a whole. So I won't really go through them because they're well known by members who are still there in the industry as a whole. Then I'll move straight to the definition of the basic fuel price, which is the next slide. Yes. As I said, Chairperson, the BFP is based on the import parity principle. Right. This is what it will cost a South African importer of petrol to buy petrol from an international refinery, transport it, and insure against losses and everything else until it lands here in South Africa. So that's the price that we'll pay. Right. Now, in terms of our pricing system, it's got both international and local elements. Now, the BFP will be your international element. So everything else that will be included in the price of petrol, I'll use petrol as an example, but the same will apply to other products as well. Until you land it into the South African port, from there now we use what is called the local element. That is your transport cost, your storage cost, your levies, fuel levies and margins, until the product is delivered at the tender service station. So that's really how the pricing system is, pricing system works in South Africa. Here, I have to remind us that the Central Energy Fund is playing a very important role in as far as Christ is concerned. It was appointed by cabinet in 1994. There's an impartial body that will determine the DfP on a daily basis and have it in the website. That's where most of this information is obtained in as far as is concerned. We are at the moment also building capacity in the department, training our officials to be able to do the calculation now. And once they are up to speed, we'll probably make a decision in the department whether it should be done in-house by the department or if we continue to do it. In terms of what depends in those calculations, which I'll probably also repeat before we go to the next slide, in terms of how the price changes, settled and quickly, as you probably are aware, every month will determine the basic fuel price for each product, right? The basic fuel price will then be based on what has changed in the international market, your basic fuel price, your crude oil price, rental exchange rate, as well as the price of this product in the international market. We look at the average, for example, we look at the average for August, we compare that average with what is there for July. Right? If the average for August is higher than what is in July, so it means the oil companies are paying more than what they will gain from the petrol price. Therefore, they are under-recovered, then the petrol price will go up. And the opposite is true. If the average for August is much lower than what is the DfP for last month, it means the oil companies are over-recovering. In other words, they're getting more than what they were aiming for in terms of what they were recovering from the DfP, then the prices will go down. We can explain that again if members need data on. But it's important, Sheridan, is that the prices are audited before they are published by the department. The department commissioned an independent auditor. In this case, is PMG. They are doing that auditing for us at the moment. Every month, once you've done all the calculations, they go to CERF, they look at the correctness of the numbers, verify the numbers, before then the department can announce those numbers. We normally give them a 3-year contract so that we can have PMG, so that we can have some consistency, so that we don't have to change them every year. We decided that let's give them 2 years, and every 2 years we can review. On the next slide, Chapter 7, we have the working rules. We call them the DfP working rules. This is really a document that explains how pricing is done in South Africa, what element, where must we get our pricing number from, and so on. So it's a very important document in as far as pricing is concerned. As you know, the price is adjusted every first Wednesday of the month. The new prices kicks in. However, the announcement is done the Friday before of the new number. So every last Friday of the month, there'll be an announcement of whether the price will go down, stay the same, or go up, and then the prices become effective the following Wednesday. What is also important is to also note the month that we've highlighted today. In April of every year, we adjust all the transport costs in our pricing system. That is only done once a year. NERSA will give us the new pipeline tariffs, and then we'll get the road tariff from the Road Freight Association. We incorporate them into our price system until the next April. But at the same time, the fuel levy and the road extension fund will also be adjusted in April. However, the Minister of Finance will make the announcement in February whether the fuel levy and road extension fund are going to go up and by how much, but then they are implemented in April in the fuel price. In terms of the September month, is very important for the weather certification because that's when the salary increase or adjustment should be done every year based on the agreement that they have between the employees and the employers. That is why now we have adjusted the wage increases because it's September month. At the end of the September month, they must get the salary adjustment. October, September is where the other margins, the wholesale margins, the retail margins, so all industry margins are adjusted on an annual basis. So we look at the industry financial figures and so on for the year, and then we then determine how much the margin should get adjusted, and then we get approval from the minister before they adjust it. On quarterly basis, let me start by saying when we adjust the fuel price on a monthly basis, we use 95 when it comes to petrol. We use 95 as a benchmark. Based on 95, what happens to 95 petrol? Okay, we then use that number to adjust the petrol price. However, because of 95 and 93 in South Africa, we obviously have to adjust for that octane differential of 2. Now normally that is done on quarterly basis. So every quarter we'll exactly the octane the forest. Normally around 2/3 to take care of the fact that we are in two octanes. Whereas on monthly basis we'll look at 95 and adjust the fuel price. The next slide. I'm not going to spend time here because I'm going to explain all these elements. This basically the element of the BSC. All these elements are quoted and they're part of the BSC. So anyone wants to import finished products from the international market, you must know that you're going to incur all these costs that are listed there. Right, the next slide. In terms of the free on board value, some call it the spot prices. This is the price that you'll pay when you buy petrol, for example, in the international market, and you get it loaded on a cargo, on a vessel, and ready for delivery. We call it free on board. So that's the price that we'll pay. At the moment, South Africa will obtain these prices from the pricing agency known as Platts. Of course, there are others like Agas, Lumeg, and so on, who publish the prices. But at the moment, we are using Platts. I must say it's huge effort and also that we had meetings, particularly with Agas as well. We also had meeting with Thomson Reuters, who are also publishing the prices, to look at what informs the methodology, what's the difference, among these price agencies and so on. And then the department will then have to look at, whether we should go with one, pricing agency, or should we go with a combination of the pricing agencies, depending on what they report on and so on. So we had those discussions internally. Instead of our petrol, where it comes from, we are saying 50% of our petrol comes from the Mediterranean market, and 50% comes from Singapore, which are the main refining centers, where people buy products and they sell them from the market, and you can buy a good item from the market. Or some of the, if you look at the Indian market, for example, even though they are not Singapore or Mediterranean, but the price that they use for their products, they might be using the Singapore pricing system as well. So it will be broke here as if that product from India also comes from Singapore. Diesel comes from the Mediterranean, 50% of that, and 50% from the Arab Gulf, and actually 50% from the Mediterranean and 50% from Singapore. This is what we use in our formula for calculation. The next slide just show you a map where these markets are in terms of orientation so that you can see in terms of also the distance when you transport the product to South Africa, because they have to be shipped from those markets to South Africa. The price code separate and part of the GSP is really the prices for these are published by the London Schenker program. The normal published annually what the price will be in terms of delivery product in the different routes and so on. But basically here is the cost of transporting the product from wherever you're buying it to South Africa. For example, when you're renting a vessel, somebody's got a cargo, they'll tell you that use my cargo to deliver your products from this distance, this how much I need, and so far. So this is what the guys would be paying when they bring products to South Africa. What is the freight cost? It depends on the distance, what product are you carrying, sometimes the size of the vessel that you are using as well. We must also indicate that currently shipped in the GAP, we have 50% premium. They say price plus 15% to supply to South Africa. This is also something that we are discussing internally to say why 15%, where does it come from, and so on. Because some of these are historic chapters, and we need to look at them and understand them so that we can be able to explain. If they do not make sense, therefore, then we also need to take this thing whether we take them out and so on. So, but at the moment, we have price plus 15%. Insurance, ocean loss, and cargo juice, these are all grouped together. The insurance there is about 15% of the cost and insurance and freight. Obviously, when you transport products, you need to insure it against anything that might happen along the way and so on. Ocean loss is basically evaporation because they're dealing with chemical products. When you transport them over a distance of time, they evaporate. Even your car, if you fill it up and you pass it home, after a while you might find that the petrol has actually gone down a little bit because of evaporation. Cargo juice, that's the tariffs, that they are paid to the National Ports Authority when you want to use the port authority to either offload your product or load something out of the country. You have to pay a tariff to the National Ports Authority, plus the fuel pricing. The next one, if you go to the next slide, demurrage. We are saying is the time spent in a harbor to load or discharge a cargo it's more on the reservoir and so on. When you get to the posing level, for example, they'll tell you, in terms of the contract that you have with the port master, how much time should you take to dock your vessel, offload of product and leave, because obviously they need to bring other vessels as well. Now, if they have agreed with you that it must take 2 days, you know, and you take more than what they have agreed with you, we are saying the DSP, we can only allow you 3 days, right, of demurrage. So this is about the contractual agreement that we have with the postmaster or the harbour master. If you take more than 3 days, the extra days are not covered by the DSP. So it can only pay for 3 days for you to dock your vessel and be able to offload about the contractual agreement that we have with the postmaster. Coastal storage, again, this is where the green pricing comes in. We have made allocation for cold storage. We are saying the industry should store products for 25 days in the coastal storage because we are using an import parity principle. In actual fact, some of these coastal storage do not exist. We have storage at the refineries, which is of course required by any refinery. You must have storage facility as part of your refining operation. At the moment, we have a lot of storage facilities, mainly on Island View, that we have, you know, even some new players that are coming in, OPEC and other players are buying storage facilities there. But that is it may, we are saying, giving them 25 days. In other words, the GST will only compensate you for storing the product for 25 days. Whether I get the value or not, it's another issue, that we need to look at compliance from our side, whether the industry is complying or not. The fact of the matter is that they recover this money. They think they are storing product 25 days. It goes for financing. Obviously, when you store product, you need to finance the product that they're storing. We are saying they are using a prime rate minus 2 for the financing of the stock that they are keeping for 25 days. So the two elements are actually linked together. This happens in the next slide. Just give you the next one. It does give you the in cents per liter, how much of all those, you know, PSP elements, how much are they in terms of the cents per liter. I'm not going to go into detail on this. I'll straightly move to the next one. These are some of the factors that influence the PSP. The first one is the conventional price of crude oil. I think some of the, you'll see one of the questions people are saying, why is South Africa not buying crude oil from African countries at a lower price? But the truth of the matter is that the price of crude oil is set in California. You know, you can negotiate your own discount depending on negotiation power, but for us as government, we can only use a price that is published by a reputable organization. Otherwise, there is inconsistency in your pricing system. So we can only use the price that's published in California. Whether the product comes from Nigeria, Ghana, wherever it comes from, we're going to use the same price as if it comes from Europe, it comes from Singapore, and it comes from Saudi Arabia and so on. It's a national benchmark. In terms of international products, supply-demand balance is very, very important for us because we are a small market in South Africa compared to the global market, compared to USA, compared to Asia, China and so on. Compared to Europe, we are very small. Now, what it means is we are a price taker. Whatever happens in terms of the supply-demand in this country, in USA, in China and so on, will impact on the price, right? Either availability of products in the market, or it could also impact on the demand for crude oil, which then, at the end of the day, will impact on the prices, either of crude oil or finished products. We know that when it's winter in the USA, when it's summer here, the demand for crude oil products is different. They use more diesel, you know, more medium distillate for, say, for space heating and so on. Then it also increases the price for those kind of products. The product inventory level, you really refer to big players like the USA, China, and so on. We know that when these countries are either building up stock for their own countries, they take more from the market, or sometimes they release their own stock to the market and they bring more supply to the market. That in itself is an impact on the price, particularly of crude oil. The DVG talked about geopolitics. We know that oil is the source of most of the tensions that are going on around the world. If you go to the bottom of it, you'll find that the main reason why there is this kind of tension is because of crude oil. People trying to get access to the crude oil. to ensure that they've got energy security for their own country. We talked about the regional exchange rate. We have seen that this month really it decreased slightly, but in the main it was stable over the last 2 months, and hence it's not a big impact on the price adjustment. But it's very important because crude oil is bought in dollars, finished product is also bought in dollars for us, so it's got very serious impact on our pricing system, the exchange rate. The international refining margin is part of the cost of the product that you buy in the international market, because if the refining margin goes up, some of the sellers of the product might attempt to also increase the price of that particular product, then it has an impact on what we are buying from the market. Like I talked a little bit about the weather patterns in the northern hemisphere. We know that if there's hurricane, whatever, Hurricane Katrina or any hurricane that happens in the USA, because of the location of the refining centers or some of the refineries in those areas, they could be affected, and the hurricane could shut down supply from those particular refineries, and as a result, the impact on the market, it freezes the market, and the prices will also go up for us as well. The next slide. I'm now moving to local sector. I've done with the international sector, but we'll take questions later on. In terms of the local sector, here I'm focusing mainly on the fuel levies. The incremental inland transport recovery levy of 3 cents a liter. This was introduced some time ago, mainly because we had one pipeline from Durban, the Durban to Johannesburg pipeline, the DJP, which was operating at full capacity, and there was no space for anyone who wants to use the pipeline at the time, even though they wanted to use the pipeline. So the levy was introduced, it was 3 cents, to compensate for people who are using other mode of transport than the pipeline to bring products to inland market in housing. Obviously, with the commissioning of the NPP, the new multi-product pipeline, there's more capacity now to bring product by pipeline. The minister repealed this levy, it's taken out of the fuel price, so next time it's presented, it won't be here. The reason is here now is because we are still wrapping up, you know, doing the final reconciliation and making sure that we close this account. Whatever money is left in the account, the minister will then take a decision where that money should go to. If there's any money left, maybe one of the accounts itself. Once that is done, then we take it out of the planning system. But at the moment, motorists are not contributing anything. It was 3 cents a liter, it has gone. The petroleum product levy is actually to reimburse the pipeline user for applicable NERSA tariff on transport fuel to the pipeline. So you probably know NERSA is the one that the pipeline carries. They determine how much people must pay to the pipeline, and then that money will actually pass through to consumers because they pay for the transportation of the product. Eliminating paraffin traceable dye levy. This was also introduced because there was a practice where people were mixing petrol with diesel. You know, because remember the reason they do that is because, IP with diesel, not petrol, sorry. Eliminating paraffin. The reason they do that was because paraffin is not taxed in South Africa. Because they are saying it's paraffin used by the poor people. But now, you know, the industry and other players came very clever, they could mix the two products 50%, 50%. And still use it in your car without any problem on your car. So in order to make sure that people do not do that practice, we introduce what is known as trace dye. It's a dye that is injected by the oil company to make sure that if you mix the two products, then it will change color, you'll see that they were mixing it. So the industry is now using this dye to do that, and they get the money from the department. In fact, the department in SARS, it's a result that appoint a consultant in conjunction with the department who then produce this paper dye. Then the industry will obtain the dye from the manufacturer, the person who's manufacturing the dye. And then they are required to use that dye so that we can see if there's missing of paraffin and diesel. The flake levy is used to finance community under recovery for the industry. The petrol price goes down for maybe 3 or more months taxation. There's a community under recovery that the industry is experiencing. So in order for us to be able to deal with that, in fact, what we are referring to as the slate is the difference between what happens on daily basis when the petrol price changes, daily BSP, compared to the previous month BSP. So there is a differential, they tell about the oil company that they're paying and what they are covering. So if it accumulates over a period of time, then we need to reinvest them, otherwise they'll run out of business. So what we have done as a department, in the past this levy used to be 43 cents or above. Then we said, no, man, there's too much money in this levy account. And at the moment, we cannot keep on, you know, collecting money from operators. So even the reason to talk about it. Then together, then we introduce what is known as the self-adaptive slate mechanism. What it means is on a monthly basis, we look at what, how much is in the slate account in terms of the money that's available at SEF. And then if it agrees to 250 million under recovery, which is if it's negative, and about 250 million, then there will be a levy. And that will be introduced to motorists that they should pay. And there's a formula to calculate that levy depending on what is there. So, as we speak now for next month, last month the levy was 4.38. Now, when you look at the late balance, there was enough money in the account. Then we've recommended to the minister to take that late levy out. So, next month it will be zero in the petrol composition, the petrol prices. So, motorists won't be paying this late next month, because of the self-adjusting mechanism and said that there was enough money. So every month we'll get that slate balance and then we'll be able to tell whether there should be a slate produced or not. So then the next slide, the fair levies which continue as fair levies, really the mandate of the Minister of Finance will make a pronouncement in February, and then our department, our role is to implement the fair price. The custom manifest levy also is collected in terms of the custom union agreement, about 4 cents a liter. It's also the SAR that is responsible for that. Rolex and fund also is announced by the Minister of Finance in February, and then we implemented, as I said, in April. The demand side management levy was introduced in 2006, particularly in the inland markets. The reason for that was it's only applicable to 95. So any other product, you don't get the demand side. I'll show you when I show you the composition of the sale price in the next slide or so. But the reason it was introduced at the time, there was a study done, it's called the octane study, where people looked at the difference between 93 octane, 95 octane, and also look at the impact on the motor vehicle that you're driving. You know, whether it's better to 95 or 93, how will you, as a motorist, benefit from that? And it was discovered that, you know, in the inland market, there's really no difference between 95, whether it's 95 and 93 in your car, in terms of the benefit that you get as a motorist. So then, the decision was taken, say, in order to discourage people from using 95 in the inland market, let's introduce a levy of 10 cents. So it should be the difference between 93 and 95. Should be around 10 cents in the inland market. However, this is not applicable in the coastal areas, because there you can feel the difference when using 95 and 93. But also because in terms of the supply, you know, the coastal areas where you import the product and so on, you don't have to transport it and so forth. However, we have come to understand now that when you buy a new car, it comes with instructions that you must use 95. So you don't have any choice of saying I can use 93, because otherwise you don't know what impact will have on your vehicle and so on. So this is something that the National Center and Department have become, some industry have said it must be, in fact some industry were saying it must be increased to 20 cents a liter. So it's a matter that we might also need to discuss and finalize, to say whether it's still necessary to sell this levy or not and so on. Directional and so forth. But just to explain more on the octane side so that people also have an idea. You know, the octane, my understanding is that the octane is more like the, I try to simplify it in my own understanding, but the cars that we see for motor racing, the octane level is 133, 135. So that is why when they move from a standstill position, you see the speed at which they can take off. It's because of the high octane, which 133, 135 and so on. Whereas 95, 93 cannot move at the same speed as those cars that we see for motor racing. So this is my understanding of the octane, if you want to break it down and simplify it. Why sometimes we buy octane and low octane. But in terms of 93 and 95, the difference is 32, which is very minimal. Chairperson, this slide might be very small in terms of the people reading the numbers, but I'm sure your copy. That will highlight composition of the different petroleum products. The first one here, P95, the only wholesale margin and everything that is until you get to the retail price, which is 14.33 in wholesale. This is the wholesale price. So the same thing will apply for ULP, which is 14.08 in wholesale. But you show you a breakdown of all the levies, everything you see is in cents per liter until it builds up to the final price. We don't necessarily spend more time on it. Then I'll move to the single maximum regional retail price of eliminating paraffin. Chairperson, as I said, the price of paraffin is supposed to be the same throughout the country in terms of the liter of paraffin that you buy. And this is the composition, now it's calculated and so on. It's linked to the BSP, obviously, of if you bought paraffin and so on. I must also emphasize, Chairperson, that the sales volume of paraffin has dropped dramatically. As more and more people are getting electrified and so on, others are using LPS and so on. However, there's still a significant market that is using LPS. It's still using IP, and we know where this market is. It's mostly the poor people who cannot afford anything else, because with paraffin, the good thing about paraffin is I can also take a mug, go to my name and ask for a mug of paraffin so that I can boil up and so on. It becomes very convenient for me to do that, and then when I get my paraffin, I can look them into you and so on. The challenge we have with paraffin separately is that a lot of middlemen involved in the sale of paraffin. And unfortunately or fortunately, we are not regulating this space in the sense that a farmer shop that sells paraffin, they do not necessarily have to have a retail license from the department to sell paraffin. You can't have a general license for operating your shop and so on, and you decide to include paraffin as part of the things that you sell there as well. Now, in order to deliver paraffin to the users of paraffin, there are a lot of middlemen, sellers and resellers who are involved, and unfortunately, they all need markup in between. So by the time the product gets to the end user, this maximum price is already exceeded, right? So they cannot even sell this price, because if they sell the price, they lose business. So we find that in some areas, there are people who are selling way above the maximum retail price. And in some areas, particularly in the coastal areas, people are selling below the maximum retail price, mainly because their market, their source of paraffin is very close, but there are not many middlemen involved in the sale of paraffin in the coastal areas. So this is something that we also need to look at, particularly because the market is always there. I don't think we'll completely get rid of the IP market. So this is the composition to show the breakdown without necessarily going into detail. Then I'll move straight to the LP gas price, the composition of the maximum LP gas price, the next slide. The next one, yeah. Right, this one also the question. I might spend a little bit of time on this one. The maximum refinery gate price of LP gas is actually the same as the BSP of 93 octane. When these regulations were developed, we looked at the 93 and said we'll use 93. Because at the time, even now, if you talk to the pricing agencies, they are still developing. There's no actual price of delivering LP gas to South Africa. So we can't necessarily get the BSP for LP gas to South Africa at the moment. You can get it to other countries and so on. Then you can infer, based on the distance, say roughly, to take it to South Africa, how much it will cost. Now, some of the industry players are complaining about the maximum refinery price. In my view, unless they come to us and say, we should now use the LP gas BSP and not the 95 octane, because BSP changes on a monthly basis. It's not what is happening in the international market. So that's the maximum refinery gate for LP gas. Already, it's catering for the import. It's assuming that we're importing LP gas based on the BSP for 93 octane. So the issue around import, to me, is something that we can discuss, the industry if they want to discuss it. But they must bear in mind that MRGP is in fact an import price, no import 92 octane. If they want us to use LPG, then they must get the figures for LPG import to South Africa. That the ones who are importing, we welcome that information so that we can look at it. Ambassador Vice Chairperson, in our discussion with EW and some of the hotels like UDGS, Afro, Gas and so on, people are pushing it together. They haven't really come to the department with data to say, these are the numbers, this is how much it cost me when I call the PGS, and it's way below the MRCP. No one has done it. We welcome that information because we cannot review or adjust these numbers unless we got the real numbers coming from the industry themselves, because they are the people who are importing. That's what is happening with the LPS. What in my view I think we need to be looking at specifically is this working rules for LPG gas. Because as you can see, I'm giving you two tables there. The first one is for the inland market, and the other one is for the coastal market, because it's not the same as the coast and the inland market. That's why I've seen two tables there, or two columns there. But what in my view, what I think we need to be looking at, if you look at the retail margin, it's 15%, for example, of the subtotal. It gives you 290 and 291. Already the retail margin is above the retail margin that the retailer gets at the service station. The retailer at the service station are getting under 1.9 cents retail margin. So this probably, I'm not going to talk too much, but I think these are things that the industry and ourselves, we need to start reviewing. Or is it fair to get this kind of retail margin for LP gas? What are the reasons we are getting this LP, this retail margin compared to a retailer who's got more operational expenses, who's got staff and so on, who's getting 140 liter that they sell? And these are things that we will have to engage in that too. But I know some of them they back off, mainly because they see some of these discussions where they will lead to, but we need to look at it. When we develop the formulas and so on, what are the flaws, what are the things that need to strengthen with the formulas and so forth. So, Chairperson, in my view, there are two things about the LPGL. If the industry wants the review, it must be the review of the MRGP. It must be, in my view, the review of the review of the working rules. The MRGP already is catered for imports because it's a BSP. And we also know that industry only imports so much. My colleague in supply, they can't have the volume. But we also know that it's not really the volumes that are imported during this month in any case, because during summer and other fuels, they're not importing anything. They're getting it from our local refineries. And yet, we are compensating them as if they're importing LPG throughout the year. So these are issues that everyone will discuss with the affected parties if they want to discuss at all. This is just the composition without going into details. Then I'll go immediately to the last slide with the frequently asked questions. We can add to the list. But the first one is why the diesel price is changing every month. As I said, the BSP changes on a daily basis. However, the decision was taken to say, you want to change the prices on a daily basis as South Africa. You want to change it by weekly, you want to change it on monthly basis, so that you can deal with other administrative issues and so on. It was really a decision that was taken at the time that we need to adjust it on a monthly basis, you know, because it don't allow us to go under administrative issues on the levies, late levies and so forth. So there's no really big reason why, you know, it could be done differently and so on. It's just a decision that was taken at the time, and these were some of the considerations when the decision was taken. What is over and under recovery, I'll bear with that, but I can quickly say, if the BSP in the sell price currently is sitting at 5 rand, alright, and then that's the BSP that we set now for September. At the end of September, if you look at the average BSP for petrol, for example, you find that it's 5.10 cents. So what it means is that the oil companies have under recovered because they were recovering 5 rand from motorists. But when they go to the market, they pay 510. Therefore, they will have the recovery. Then the petrol price in October will go up. Similarly, it opposite is true. If the BSP is 5 rand, and by the end of September, we found that the average BSP for the month is 490. It means the oil companies were over recovering by 10 cents, then the price will go down the following month. That's the simple way of explaining over and recovery. why is petrol cheap by neighboring countries and yet they purchase it from RSA, particularly the Sakum Basay with $249 million? The main reason really for that, they do not have the free lane that we have. They do not have the road extension that we have. And if you add the two components, they add to more than 3 rands on this slide here. On this slide, the other, yeah, I can highlight it there. But the free levy and the road extension fund, the levy is $2.24. Road extension fund is $1.04. Add the two, is more than 3 rands. And the neighboring countries like Botswana, Lesotho, they do not have that in their fuel price. And their power price is much lower than what we are paying in South Africa. Why is Sasol not selling petrol at lower prices? Because they produce from coal and the place in Gauteng. Obviously, this is a question coming from somebody in Gauteng. The reason for that, firstly, that we are in a regulated environment. So in a regulated environment, we don't have two prices. That's what my understanding is. But Chairperson, I think to put in perspective here, that only supplies about 25% of our market, right? However, they operate in other provinces as well. They are not only operating in housing. So a Sasol station, for example, in Cape Town, is not necessarily getting its product from Sasol in Kasunda or from Sasol back in housing. They got what is known as product swap with the oil company. So Chevron, for example, here will supply in the Sasol station in Cape Town. And Sasol do the same in the market. So there's that product swap that oil companies are having. Now it can have different prices in an environment like that, obviously. So that for security of supply is also very important. But I think the main one is because we're in a regulated environment. Now, let's say we are in a regulated environment. Anyone can sell whatever price that they want to sell. And people are assuming that that's all. I think such a person of the price, let me say this. Diesel is not regulated by the department. If you see the prices of diesel that Sasol is selling compared to the other companies, it's more or less the same. So why can't they sell it lower? Because it's not regulated. That's the other question that most of you should be asking themselves as well. That's not necessarily mean if you regulate, the prices will definitely be lower. But the example I wanted to give is, say we're in a deregulated market. Anybody decide to sell like whatever price that they want to sell. There was a period where we had fuel supply shortage in the country. You know, particularly when you move from, when you move to cleaner fuels and so on, 2006 and so forth. So during that period, you move to 3-4 cell stations, you don't get fuel. The next cell station you get, how much do you pay for a liter of petrol if it's deregulated? You could even pay 15 rand, 20 rand because it's deregulated. But in order to protect the consumers, that's where the regulation comes in, to say, irrespective of where you get your fuel, in South Africa, this is the price that we'll say is the guaranteed price. So people must also understand that deregulation does not necessarily mean lower prices. It would in fact mean higher prices in the future. The next one is, why is government not deregulating fuel prices? I think I've dealt with that question, to protect the consumers in the main and the economy. Why should it be more expensive than EFP95, more expensive than EFP97 housing? We talked about the demand side lane of 10 cents that is imposed in the Indian market on EFP95, which is not necessarily imposed in the coastal area. So that's why the prices are not the same. Why the government not buying oil from African countries at a lower price? Firstly, government is not buying oil. Secondly, as you've seen the slide, they showed that the DDG were getting oil from Nigeria, from Angola, and from Ghana. But it will never be at lower prices, because the price of crude oil is determined internationally by OPEC, Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries, who make a determination on how much a barrel of oil should cost. Yes, individual buyers can negotiate discounts, but the government cannot use the discounts that different members are getting in our price system. We can only use, you know, prices that are determined by the people, the reputable organization, so that anyone can have reference to those prices. Chairperson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
are no actions from the side of the department. Can we have the first set of questions from honorable members? Questions, comments?
Thanks, Chair. There's certainly been lots of presentations here and lots of information shared. If I can go back to the first presentation, though, because I think what's clear in all of this is that, like other parts of our energy sector, this is something that is going to require major investment in the next decade, basically. We've got a situation whereby refineries at the moment are not producing according to their nameplate capacity. Major investment is needed in there, and we need to look at future refining needs over the next 10 years. And the question is you know, what is this kind of investment that's required? And there's a couple of questions that come out of that. Firstly, who makes this investment? Is it the private sector or is it the state sector in terms of sector SA? What kind of investment? So, you know, are we looking at building a new refinery in South Africa or are we looking at building it somewhere else in the region? Or are we going to rely on imported refined products again into the future? These are critical questions we have to ask. And this is all done within the context of the fact that the margins on refining are very small at the moment. And so, in fact, the state could, in fact, find itself investing in refinery which doesn't make much profit and which, in fact, we find ourselves having to pay for and the consumers, the petrol consumers, in fact, have to pay for that. So these are the kind of critical questions that we need to ask ourselves. In fact, I'm putting this through to the department and to the minister. I know that this is something that they've been thinking about for a long time. I'm just interested to know where are we with regards to these decisions. I mean, in Tonga, sometimes comes up every now and then as a question of whether we're going ahead with it or where we are going ahead with it. It's a question of whether it's in fact it's going to be sited in Coca, which a lot of people question the sanity of that with regards to pipelines and all of that would need to be put in place. So where are we in terms of the kind of investment decisions around refined capacity? And of course, I ask this also in the context of the cleaner fuel standards and the cost recovery mechanism that has to be put in place in there too. I'm just interested in those kind of broad questions around where we're going in terms of the major investments that we're going to have to make into this sector. But after that, what I'm also interested in is, I mean, as you said, bitumen is also a clear product that we definitely need in South Africa as well. I know that the city of Cape Town about a year ago was complaining to me to say that their road building activities are being stymied a bit by the lack of bitumen in South Africa. Have we been able to confront the shortage of bitumen? What plans have been put in place in terms of that? Do we have plans to put in place importation of bitumen? Has that been dealt with at this stage? Because clearly if the refineries aren't able to produce enough bitumen, we have to start looking at import facilities for that. I'm just interested to find out what the situation is there. Then also in terms of PetroSA and the engine deal, which I know was a bit of a scandal wrapped up in that last year, and I think certain heads rolled over that. But where are we with that deal at the moment? Because, I mean, I think what we are trying to do in South Africa is to get away from the vertical integration in the liquid fuel sector, and this seems to be taking us to in the direction of even more intense vertical integration with PetroSA wanting to buy a retailer. Where is that deal? Has decisions been made on that? Where are we sitting with those kinds of decisions? Because I think that's a critical component of this. And then just in terms of the licensing regime as well, I mean, complaints that I have heard as well is that in terms of the licensing of retail service stations, certain places can only take a certain amount of service stations. But then people apply for a license one kilometer away from a current service station. It then goes under appeal, but that process takes so long and people continue to build that service station, and this threatens other people's livelihoods. I'm just interested to know what that process is in terms of licensing, how you make the decision as to whether a service station can be licensed in a certain area where there's existing stations. I'm just interested to find out details about that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. The first presentation, Mr. Kurela, ended these basically by saying that we must all use diesel. And I think one of the stakeholders here today is really doing their bit. They're using about 40 tons of diesel an hour just for one of his facilities. 11 billion rand at a budget of 2.5 billion, but I'll just mention that. Also on the refineries. Now, why is the refineries only operating at 80%? Is this a lack of planning, not being maintained, or not shut down for plant maintenance work? What is the reason? I agree there should be more refineries and refineries. I'm just fading through this. Also, a byproduct of the refining is LP gas, which is desperately needed in this country where we have the economy is really struggling with energy crisis and the crisis of electricity. And the second presentation by Mr. Marker. Again, the gas, we use about 300,000 tons of LPG gas or liquid petroleum gas in the country, and I think only 6.5, I think the presentation said that one of the vessels, if I can remember correctly, I think only 6.5 tons is imported. But I also imported at a very good price, very good price. Imported gas is not as expensive at all. So the problem actually, and I'm just taking your opinion, I can answer on that, but also I think it's at Saldanha Bay, the liquefied gas import facility terminal there, is held up by squabbling for a state organization, the National Port Authority. It took 4 years actually just to make a decision, and this was recognized actually as very essential by government itself. Everyone agrees that it's desperately needed. Now, this even doesn't speak of the process. There's now even rumors of criticism, you know, people being appointed without qualifications, etc. And the basic fuel price. The levy, there's 7 levies on this thing. There are already cash-strapped motorists in this country who are suffering with toll gates and with everything, just can't afford all these prices anymore. And I'm glad to hear that a minister and a wisdom has scrapped the one. Let me just get to that. I'm trying to find it. But my God, if we pay for it like a cell phone company, if you pay for the phone and you've got to pay for the data and you pay and become billionaires over price, if we build a pipeline, we count on paying for the pipeline over and over and over already when the pipeline is there already. Here we go. The 7 levies. Petroleum products levy is also for the pipeline. The minister set the transport recovery levy on the bus. State levy, fuel levy, exercise levy, road accident fund, everything that we don't pay in our neighboring countries, media neighboring countries. Yeah, the motorists pay for their road accident. They do take out insurance. They have to pay for everything over and over. The Samar also says on the paraffin, this is what we need to look at on the price. Paraffin is definitely not regulated. There's a gate price set by Department of Energy. But then I think that that's F-Gas and BP and Shell and all these retailers ask what I want. Paraffin for oneness. And paraffin is just one of the things that the poorest of the poor people need. And they're not really, there's no, people got what I, exorbitant prices, especially in the rural area, where people at least can expect it. So I've got a little problem with the Sasol selling prices, the same price. That'll make the same as why you sell. Or IP, well, 95 petrol, the levy on that as well. It really doesn't make sense to me. I just don't know enough. Thank you.
Hello, hello.
Thank you, Jefferson. Firstly, let me first thank the minister for answering the acting part, because that was of real concern for me, that every time the department comes and presents to us, there's forever people acting. So at least we can celebrate the part that the acting part are being sorted out. And also on the refineries as well, to the challenges that you have mentioned, the acting, or are you also acting? Okay. Also on the refineries as well, I'd just like to know in the specific time frame, do you have a time frame on you say there needs to be refineries for your challenges and that is your outcome. Is there a specific time frame? So I'd just like to know when is the deadline for that, or you have a few dates or whatsoever. And then on the key stakeholders part as well, the public participation, what was the outcome and which area was that? And as I said last week, I forever ask for less. I don't get from the department. I don't know why. But I feel if I ask for a specific list to be sent to the secretary to forward to me, I think it's of great importance, because you won't know where you are going if you don't know where you're coming from. I believe in that. And I don't want to have the same frustrations as my colleague, Mr. Van Krayen, of sitting in this committee for 5 years, and nothing has happened. So can I please have that list? And then on the key source of crude oil, there's a five others the 10%. Can I also have a list of name of the others as well, because others can mean a lot of things. So can I also have that others outline for us, please? And then on the wages of the petrol attendants as well, can we also know and see at what specific salary you are looking at as the increase of there? Is it at least at 5,000 as the manifesto of EFF stated? And then on the petrol, on the perfin part as well, is there a plan or a policy pertaining to the department for supplying poor and unemployed people at least free perfin or so forth? And I have, if there is a policy, can I also have that policy? I hope I will get these documents on the next meeting, because as I said, it's frustrating that you ask for documents or you ask for things and you never get it from the department. So hopefully we'll have next time. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is on the 1977 Act. I'm not sure as whether this act has been amended. Maybe if I could get the clarity with regard to this act. Because the time when it was presented here, Chair, I got scared that was still using the 1977 act. Similarly, somebody might be benefiting here and frustrating government to proceed with its national development plan. Can I get some time to regard to that? The other one, Chair, is with regard to subject that it is a 250,000 barrel per day deficit in 2012. Can I also check us whether where are we now in 2014? Thank you, sir. These are the were some of my two questions. I guess otherwise we might get some time again for my second time. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is on the issue of the shortage of the refinery. I want to check with the department as to how far is the Petro SA on the muted Tombo refinery in Goga, and the acquisition of Enzen has been, I mean, on the pipeline for long now. What are the time frames in ensuring that that is concluded? Are there any plans to ensure sustainability of Petro SA refinery in Motor Bay? Because this has been trending that it will be closed, which is something that caused some fears in the community and also posed a threat to the security of supply to the country. Now, on the this is more of a clarity-seeking question. The key factors around the suggestion that they give to say a state market must have limited participation, it is put there on your bullets. What are the key factors on the role of the state on these sectors? And then one last issue, the supply of a biofuel versus the food security. It is a debate that is out there. Now, I want to understand from the president, because they say knowledge is power. Is foodstuff used for biofuel production so that I am empowered? Thank you.
Engine capacity
tend to tell you he was the one who asked me the question. So I've got a broader question on the economy. Is the import. It seems we're importing everything, every country. So that is bad for our economy. So do we have a turnaround strategy or some strategy to go away from that, to move away from that? Was that a challenge? Because we've got one of the main challenges as a country, the challenge of job creation. My other question is the limited state data has been already been raised by the Honourable Mamisa. What do they want? Who are those stakeholders? What is their agenda for limited state participation? That's a challenge. That's a problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. In this row, I was the only one who left. Everyone is focused. Let me first take this opportunity and thank the department for the presentation. But a lot of questions have been asked. I just go back to the petrol attendance wages. It's a good thing that the department is being involved in it. We are aware that most of the petrol attendants, how are they used by the owners of the garages? So I just want to find out what are the monitoring mechanisms that whatever that we are going to agree on when we finish the negotiations of the wages is going to happen, because you may agree on 3,000, I'm just making an example of 5,000, but you'll find out that there will still be the owner of the garage that will receive the petrol attendant 800 to 600. Is there a monitoring mechanism? If there is, what is the monitoring mechanism? Thank you.
Thanks very much. Hello, Maka. Oh, you had it not? I ran into some difficulties. The second hit by another law, I understand. I've forgotten the first hit of the requirement. I think we need to clarify that so that that can be acted on. Can we have a response? I have several questions myself. Can we have responses at this stage? I'm not sure if we could have some.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. The list that the Honourable Law is referring to is a list of the municipalities that hold ESCOM. ESCOM does not report to the Department of Energy. And unfortunately, everybody, there's a number of questions on ESCOM that come to the Department of Energy. ESCOM reports to the Department of Public Enterprise. And questions on ESCOM should be directed to the Department of Public Enterprise. If they are directed to us, we will have to request public enterprises to send us information, which public enterprises should then request to ESCOM. The entity does not respond to us. The rest of the department will respond.
You confirm that it is DPC?
Yes, Chairperson. Thank you very much.
And he is not acting DPC, he is the DPC.
DPC.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Minister. Chairperson, honorable members, I'll try and be quick. Some of the issues will require that we perhaps come and elaborate, or we send return responses. Just to say that on the refineries, we are guided by the NDC, and it is clear that that decision has to be taken by 2017. We are working flat out to ensure that we actually beat the that deadline. But of course, it's going to require quite a lot of work. Now, the modalities of such a refinery, I think, will also be dependent on a number of factors. Our aspiration is that there must be in that refinery state involvement. That is our aspiration. Now, this also talks to the expectation that there should be less participation by the state. Now, that comes from a number of factors. I guess it's an ideological view as well. And those new entrants who believe that the state may crowd them out. And our view is that there has got to be some fixed participation in the sector. And I guess what can be discussed is the level at which that is reached. And there are pros and cons. But that conversation as a country must have, and you know, for example, contracts on crude oil that were referred to. Some of them are better negotiated, by the way, on a state level. Now, when you have refineries of your own, where you can actually use that crude oil, there is a benefit that accrues perhaps not directly to the consumer but to the economy. So, because we're in a regulated market, the benefit can accrue to the economy balance of payment. The LPG situation in Tanzania, I think that is a very unfortunate situation. That is a very unfortunate situation, and we are seized with it at the moment. And it's clear that there were a number of parties that didn't see eye to eye, but it's before the courts at the moment, and therefore I cannot elaborate more on that. Safe to say that we don't believe that as a department we're necessarily a catalyst to that development. The issue of the refineries utilization, I think it's age also of the refineries. There is a lot of investment, reinvestment that goes in there, but as you know, with any old equipment, you can only extract out of it so much after 30 years of its existence. I think it's also important for me to indicate here that the importation necessarily is not a bad thing, but it's the level at which you are going to rely on imports as a country. I think we've got to have a limit and say beyond this and no more. And that is what we will have to, because also it's about the distance that from the world refining centers to South Africa. Other countries can import because it's 200 kilometers. It's 500 kilometers. With us, it's thousands of kilometers. So do you want to wait for a vessel that has got a voyage of 15 days and on top of the contracting that is about 2 weeks? And so those are some of the considerations. So we have to put all these things on the table and have a discussion on them. The Mthombo, I think, again, as part of this whole decision of 2017, and that's why we're saying we'd rather sooner rather than later, but I think the recommendations will come in as far as that is concerned. At this stage, I would prefer that perhaps at a later stage could respond on where exactly Irene, this is a project that the PSA was working on. Is I think at this stage I wouldn't want to respond to that one. On Mossel Bay Refinery, the full commitment to keeping that refinery operational. We've indicated one of our issues that we want to deal with. We want to make sure that it continues to operate in whatever form. But as it operates, we are committed to doing whatever we can to ensure that it does. What's encouraging about that part of the world is that as Total does there to proceed with exploration, if there is a find there, then the immediate beneficiary could be Petro-SA. The Act has been amended a number of times, so we are not working on 1977, but the Act itself, we still refer to the 120. There are a number of amendments that have since taken place. The migration to diesel and the issues we can respond to in writing, because one is efficient, there is no issue, in fact, even on the coast, we can respond to that fuller in writing, because we also need to explain the octane issue, because it's a sea level issue. At high altitude, you really don't need a 95, and that's how it is, because in a combustion engine, you just don't need, you need less octane at high altitude. So you're wasting. That's why it's real punishment to motorists who are wasting octane in land. That's what that land is for, to discourage. You really don't need that. Then the market will talk to the issue of the color tenant if the chair allows. Then what is the turnaround? Quickly, we need to encourage DMR to proceed with encouraging, or facilitating more exploration and production of hydrocarbons on our shores. I think that is basically will really turn around the situation, including shale. I've tried to be. And then the paraffin issue. So one thing about paraffin that we are looking at is, ideally, we should work towards replacing that with LPG. So we need to really move a lot of consumers to LPG. Now we need to make LPG more affordable. That's basically the long term where we need to go. As to what we do in the interim, it's going to, the difficulty will be actually managing it at the spaza shop level. You can manage it up to a certain point, wholesale, up to a service station, but beyond that, it just becomes difficult. Because I buy, if I live in Kwalongole, and then I sell to my neighbor, and I know that the inspectors of the department cannot cover 50,000 outlets. So they would have to, be at least 1,000 of them. So it will require some other solution. Biofuel, definitely, food security issues have been catered for in biofuel. There's been a certain feedstock that has been basically prohibited. One of those is maize. is definitely prohibited. We are not going to go that route. And that's the decision that was taken by Captain. So with their permission, Chair, Mr. Michael, I think, could cover that.
Thank you, DJ. Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'll start with the awareness campaign that we had on fuel prices that we went throughout the provinces. I think we wanted to find out which areas to cover. So we would all appreciate the fact that we cannot cover every area in South Africa. So we went to every province. In Limpopo, we went to Toyando, we went to JFS, and also did one in Bulukwani. Then we went to Free State. We did one on the freeway on one of the main service stations on the N1. And we also went to a mall in Free State, right in town. And then we went to George, in a mall in George, in the town. We also went to Mossel Bay, where we did the campaign. We went to Siyabuswa. We went to Secunda, the shipping mall in Secunda. We also went to the Eastern Cape. We went to East London. We went to Port Elizabeth. And we also went to the Mthatha Plaza in Mthatha. So we almost covered some of the area, but obviously it was impossible to go through in every area. But the response was very good. People were very happy to understand how petrol price is calculated. We also gave them the fuel saving tips on how to save fuel. If you have to save fuel, about 16 of those tips. But also because we come from the Department of Energy, we also talk about how to save electricity with the pamphlet that we also told them how they can save electricity at home. So that's the area that we covered. In terms of the wages, this is really something that we really need to talk about because we are moving from a very low base in as far as petrol attendants are concerned. Currently, before the adjustment, they were earning 19 rand 15 cents an hour. We adjusted by 9%, it goes to 21 rand 1 cent an hour. We multiply that in a figure for the month, they're getting 3,389 rand 20 cents, which is very, very low, below the minimum wage. Of course, this is a situation that must be discussed between the employers and the employees, reach an agreement and so on. But it is a concern, Chairperson, that we are moving from a very, very low low base. So I think those are the two, Chairperson. I'm not sure if there's any other one you want me to cover.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. The bitumen issue. I think it's broader than just import facilities. It's also about a specification for bitumen in South Africa. That we need to look at because some of the people who want to import cannot import because of the specification. And that specification is not set by the department. So we may have to have a separate discussion on that. But what we can say is that we have the policies, in my view, and legislation from Parliament that we need to attract investment into this sector. But I think what is important is alignment of state organs that operate in the sector. I think that NERSA, the Port Authority, and so on. I think that is what is required. Perhaps that alignment is necessary because if one regulator says this and the other one is the opposite, then the investors, including state-owned companies, they then get hampered in making the necessary investments by conflicting methods. So we have to deal with that head-on. Thank you.
Chief Mayor, I just need to mention that according to the list that we have here, we have several issues. One, Honourable Chair Members, the issue of the economics, I'm a member of the meeting, the economics are important. I think it's important that if you build a refinery these days, it's a very, very expensive exercise. And who's going to pay for it? It's a consumer. So it's a fine balance between security of a refined product vis-à-vis the importance of it. So it is why we have to look at it very carefully and also do a projection in the future. That's one honorable chair, and one that hasn't been dealt with, I think we just need to do end off from the partner side, is that we also have what we call integrated energy centers that we, with the assistance, the department assistance with the petroleum industry, with all the petroleum companies, are establishing petrol outlets throughout the country, especially in rural areas where you're not going to get a normal petrol operator to invest in areas where there's low volumes to be sold. So we have this program we call Integrated Energy Centers that's been established throughout the country in rural areas. 10 of them have been established. And not only supplying petroleum products, but it's also a hub for other economic developments. There's internet cafes, there's bakeries, there's a lot of economic activities happen around these integrated energy centers. We thought just to flag that also. You're welcome if you want to do some visits to some of these energy projects that are through the country. We can link it with the IEC. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. You know, earlier on when the Minister alluded to the petrol price will come down, majority of the House celebrated. And then the presenter alluded that the petrol prices will also come down. Memo of us have celebrated that because it doesn't affect us so much. So it's quite disappointing to see that the department has no plan for, in order to give everyone electricity. It's a long-term goal. But what are we going to establish for those communities currently that are unemployed, that are using paraffin to just cook a meal? And then we celebrate petrol, you know, that is the price of petrol that is coming down because it affects us. But we don't celebrate, you know, in the same regard the paraffin issue. And I can't recall on this gentleman's name next to you. He did allude last time to that integrated centers that he's having. And it was one of the lists that I have inquired as well to the department because it was not the first time he did allude to that. And then it's almost like I'm not going to be mad that I'm asking like unnecessary questions or requiring unnecessary lists. Because if I'm asking a list, can I please get it? I think that should be all the, I mean, is there no importance from the department side to give me this list? Or don't they seem the question important? So can I please have that list as well? Because you did allude to those centers previously in the presentation. Thank you.
Wait, honourable member. Tell me about you. Honourable member, Sarah.
I think mine is rather a comment, not a full objection. I find it rather out of order for the department not to be able to respond on the projects of their key stakeholders. We are now referred to SSF on the project Yasekuha. And I expect the Department of Energy to be on par with all the issues and the projects, especially on issues of importance for our country like refineries. That's my commentary, hoping that they will forward their response on their question in writing. CFF is not here to respond, or they are not here to make a presentation. It's energy. Now, energy must be able to speak on all the projects of their key stakeholders. That's what we expect here when you ask questions. Thank you, Chair.
we now have Honorable Freling, Honorable Mabunda, Honorable Estes. You want us to go through the list. I'm quite happy to do that if we're going to extend it our time. Okay? Please, no walking out of the meeting because of the extension of time. Honorable Freling.
Mine is just a quick question. This with regards to dieselization. I mean, I think I've already started that. I do run diesel cars. But I'm not sure about the long-term impact of that and whether, in fact, we should be looking at LNG, in fact, as a process as well in terms of the government fleet. But one of the issues with diesel is just the quality of our diesel, and particularly the high sulfur content, and whether diesel is, in fact, regulated or in terms of the quality of our diesel. Because I know with biodiesel and all that coming now as well, is there any standards that are put in place in terms of the diesel that is sold to consumers and the quantity of that? I'm just interested. Thanks.
That choice is more a function of price. Not a whole of reason.
No, thanks, Chairperson. I think Honorable Railing just tried a bit of my question. In fact, it's a follow-up. You know, if the presentation is made and we ask questions, if they are not relevant, I think it's also an answer to say that question is not relevant than to keep quiet, because you will keep on asking the same question if it's not answered. Like, I asked a question to say migration from petrol to diesel vis-a-vis the cost of the vehicle we are going to use. Is it not getting back to the same issue that we're trying to escape from? Number two is the new role players. I didn't hear the answers of these questions. If they are not relevant, please just say these questions are not relevant so that we will have to carry on. Thank you.
I forgot that question on the moral case, so I need to put it back to the Department of Sport. Honorable Stella.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with Honorable Highland. The sulfur content of diesel is very important. Very important. Most manufacturers now of the newer vehicles actually state that it must be below. And the same goes for to obtain nitrogen petrol. I think it's ridiculous to say, or to levy petrol 95 in Gauteng. Some manufacturers say that a car can only be run on 95, and that goes for the same. And also, Dr. Van said that is my term, we must take a realistic of it. Economies that run on supply and demand, as this country, as any country. And if we can't supply, then we need to import. If we can only produce so much of LP gas, then we need to import. Only 3%, and with the crisis, the energy of this whole country system, and only 3% of households, industries use LP gas then, and we can't supply, obviously we must import. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, honorable members. So those are the last questions and responses from the department.
Chair, members, first, I don't think it was planned not to answer questions on the chair. That's not the way we do things in the Department of Energy. Apologies for that, honorable member, through you, Chair. I think there's firstly, I'm a little low in terms of the question of the list. I think it's even on the website. My apologies if they haven't been forwarded to you. I think in the previous presentation, the list earlier of the different places in the country that we have that 10 IECs and what we plan, that standard information available. So I will forward it to the executive that he can submit it for that test. So I'm not going to be about that policy, but it's also very challenging. On the one hand, if you look at the world, if you look at the GDP of a country, this is the energy usage. There is a migration from electricity down to other energy sources. And We need to move away from that. So we also want to stimulate the usage of a peripheral. It's not economic growing energy consuming product. So we need to move away. So we mustn't stimulate that. And if you start making it more food available, then your regulations to manage that, it is becoming so difficult and costly. So it's a very difficult one between assisting the poor on using that energy. But our drive in the department is rather go for energy switching. Hence our drive in electrification, the huge rollout that we have, 302,000 connections that we've done last year, the LP gas to be drive with the non-grid program. We've established a non-grid rollout for the country, those that have been exposed to it. We know that it's also gas, LP gas being rollout. So I think it's a really serious concern for us to, on the one hand, have access to energy, vis-a-vis a clean access to money energy. So we have looked at this government that the heads on LP on working to assist in that regard. But to go beyond that, we're actually then moving the usage of it in the wrong direction. I think there's some questions I'm standing on the migration. Is something that we just need to do. Before. So my colleagues have used the other two outstanding questions on here.
Thank you very much, Chair. And I also need to as the acting DG has said, apologize because the mistake that I made was to look at body language and the time. And so I was sort of rushing through the responses. So I need to apologize for that. Just to start with the issues of petrol and stuff, to say that I think the sensitivity that I'm mindful of also on this is that there are certain decisions that are board decisions. And at the right time, they then decide what to make public and what not. So my view was that at this stage, I had not been mandated to respond to those, but clearly what we will do is to ensure that that question is responded to in writing as soon as possible. The issue of the migration from petrol to diesel, I think that what we need to do as per the department is to have what is referred to as a calculator, which calculates, you know, how much if you drive 30,000 kilometers per year, how much you will save if you have same vehicle, same engine capacity, one petrol, one diesel. Because you will find that actually the as much as the diesel may have cost more, in 5 years you actually will benefit. It may have cost more, but you will benefit. I think that is that you know calculation that is something we have to have even on our website. However, there are policy interventions that can be made also to assist the migration. For example, we could make representation to the you know relevant authorities, being treasurer, to say, what about you know a tax incentive, for example, that will then cater for you know that kind of migration. So I'm not saying that's what we're going to do, but I'm saying those are some of the interventions that we can make or we can consider. And then we are then able to move, because at the end of the day, it's going to benefit. It is a benefit, definitely, to the pockets of the, in fact, not only pockets, to the transport sector. If you migrate the taxi industry, for example, just the taxi industry, migrating to diesel will make a big difference.
justice, diesel was always referred to as a dirty fuel because of, you know, but the engine technology has since improved. Now, on the quality, we have a program that we can talk to, which is Mr. Basham Shaka, who's sitting behind me, is responsible for. It's basically fuel quality monitoring, and that they do together with our compliance people. And we monitor at service stations. We go there, we take a liter of diesel, we take a liter of petrol, it gets tested. And if you say that you are selling 50 ppm and we find that you are selling 500, then we have a, you know, some very conversation which doesn't end very well. So that is in place. We are planning to actually accelerate that program. Treasury has even given us more funding to ensure that that program we roll it out as far as wide as possible. Just on the issue of the role players, our emphasis on role players is very simple. There must be radical, you know, this sector presents an opportunity for transformation, radical transformation. I believe more than most sectors. So that conversation we've got to have. We've got to move to ensure that the landscape changes. It has changed since 2009. But I think we need to then sustain that change and make sure that we bring more historically disadvantaged South Africans into this space. In some instances, we need to bring South Africans, you know, generally, because they don't participate in some of the, you know, areas in the region. So that is the those are the new players I'm talking about. Lastly, on harassment, to say that there is a safety issue. Every 2 years, I believe that in this country we have, every 2 years we have a 9/11 because of harassment. 9/11 was one incident, but on paraffin, every 2 years we have 9/11. And by that I mean the deaths, the maiming because of paraffin fire. So this is something that then says we need to have migrants, because the cost, what is the cost of one life? What if you say every 2 years, 3,000 left. That's unacceptable. So that is part of our consideration, to say with LPG, you won't get this kind of, you know, the death come as a result of the fire. So those are some of the considerations. And again, I must apologize if I missed one.
I want to close at this point. Chairperson, I don't want to delay the meeting longer, but I want to keep my note. There's one question on petrol agency that we do not really respond to. If we can, these are moving away from this guy. Okay, the one on licensing of petrol dumping stations, we didn't address that one. Okay, the monitoring, Chairperson, in terms of the wages, the union, they've already informed the central attendants that they are due a salary increase of 9% in September. So already there are some of them already aware. But from the department point of view, so we have inspectors who go to the service station. One of the things that they also need to find out if this wage increase was really implemented by the trainers. Thank you. thanks a lot. I think we should have got to close at this point, Honorable Member, for sure. It's got to be another two. I think one thing is that I think we should say the committee has been welcome the fuel price decrease that will be announced at the committee that night. We have raised several times the issue of staffing stability at the senior level in the department. The minister earlier on said the matter that is falling through. So the issue that we've got to monitor to ensure that the issues of the other vacancies or staffing or active positions are resolved as presently as possible. So we welcome the presentation, the two presentations that have been made, and the fact that both the minister and the deputy minister were here do everything possible that on every meeting of the committee, both of them or each one of them does attend the minister committees in the other meetings of this committee. Lastly, that to Honorable Sweden. The big elephant in the energy sector room is the whole issue about an integrated vision, a targeted long-term vision. What are we going to do in the different sectors? How are we going to align the vision, the visions of the different departments, the agencies? How are we going to sequence our actions? And in the context of the long-term vision, how do we respond to some of the pressing issues that we must respond to today? And there are skills issues, there are funding issues, there are capital strength issues. Tomorrow we'll be dealing with one of those. I'm sure those members who are available will attend the ESCOM presentation at the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises at 9:30. That's one of the urgent things we're going to have to respond to as the committee, working together with the two departments and that Portfolio Committee and the Select Committee. But it is quite clear in my mind that unless we clear of the long-term vision, and there can be integration and alignment between the different departments, the different agencies, sequence our action, then we can be able to work out what capacity or even what capacity does the state have. What role is going to be played by different role players? Do we have the funding through certain things that we would otherwise have liked the state to do? But the state can do simply from a point of view of a level of funding. So what are you going to do? So it is that kind of discussion that I think is going to be important for us. As I said earlier on, that we would suspend a bit ideological blacklisting on these matters, because they are real, they affect our people. If we make mistakes now, future generations will pay. As we pay in ESCOM now, because we made a mistake some time ago. So we're going to have to be clear, to be practical about what can be done, and how it has got to be done, and what are going to be the different mixes. I hope that at some point, the reason we have been having the presentations is because it's important so that we have the information, but also to ensure that we can hold these initiatives and the department accountable. But it was also for information, please, precisely because most of us here would have been new members. So we're going to have to come to a point as the committee to work out, given the information now we have, what are the priorities of the committee? that against which want to hold the department accountable and some of these entities accountable. So that we don't go through this ritual of presentations and more presentations, so we can push. You're going to have to ensure that there's accountability, there's oversight, but in some instances you're going to have to push to get things done, especially those we decide are important for the country. So we have to have a time now for our own retreat to think what we need to do as a committee going forward in the light of all the information we've received from the department, on the different sectors, and from the different entities. But otherwise, thanks very much, and we hope nothing happens in the international market that's going to force it to increase petrol next month. Thanks a lot.